When Ramana Maharshi was asked, how do we measure our progress on the spiritual path? How do we know if we are making progress? They asked him. And he said, and some people don't like this, they say, no, no, he didn't really say that, but it's there. The degree of absence of thoughts is your measure of progress on the spiritual path. It's as simple as that. And then some people say, no, what he really meant was, who is talking? Thought. It's trying to convince everybody else that that's not what he said. But be careful here not to make the state that is free of thinking into another future state to be achieved, because that's, you can't achieve it in that way in the future. Not as something to be added to you. It is an enormous, the greatest renunciation, and the only ultimately true renunciation is not so much the renunciation of worldly things, the renunciation of sexuality, the renunciation of possessions, the renunciation of certain kinds of food, whatever it may be. The ultimate renunciation is, and I'll say it, to renounce thought. And thought, it says, tries to convince you that in that renunciation you would become, you would revert to the state of the cabbage, the vegetable. And it says this is not a desirable state. And that is true. You don't want being a cabbage. It's beautiful for the cabbage, but the cabbage lives at one with the totality. All vegetative life, all nature lives totally in the state of oneness still. So it's totally right for the cabbage to be the cabbage. But it is not the destiny of humans to revert to the vegetative or animal stage, although compared to humans, nature and animals are very, very sane. Compared to most of human life, there's enormous sanity there, simply because they have not left, they haven't gone out into more and more highly differentiated form and form identification. They haven't left the source, that they haven't gone that far from the source as humans have. And so, yes, there's great, every animal is so rooted in being still compared to neurotic humans. Wow, just look how animal moves and is itself, completely itself. Not trying to be something, it is. But it's not, we are not going back there. The animal also is free of thought, although occasionally the beginnings of thought movements can be observed in certain animals. We go beyond thought. One could say we are rising above thought, where we do not lose the ability to think. Simply means we are no longer reduced by thinking. We are no longer trapped in thought. We can now use thought. Thought will operate when it's needed. It will be applied to a particular situation. But whenever even a situation that needs to be resolved, a challenge that arises, and it can only arise in the now, before thought arises, attention is given to it. And that attention is the state of thoughtless awareness, pure attention. You're looking at the totality of the situation in stillness, alert, alive stillness. There's a looking. In that looking, enormous intelligence operates, and I'm looking in a wider sense, it may not necessarily be through the eyes. Attention is giving to this, to the situation, complete attention, in stillness. And then, perhaps, either spontaneous action or thought that then leads to action arises. Spontaneous realization, perhaps in the form of thought, what needs to be done, or action without the intermediary of thought arises, and it's right for that situation. So thought can still operate. It already does in all creative people, people through whom, who create in whatever their field of activity is, they become highly creative, and many of them don't know that they have the ability, even if only, it may only last for a few seconds, to be in the state of thoughtless awareness. That is the creative state. And there are many people, those who are creative, relatively few compared to the majority, they don't even know that this is how they're created, and some of them do know it, that it arises out of the state of still alert presence, which is the higher intelligence, the unconditioned intelligence that operates. And then the insight comes, or the doing happens. But we are going beyond that. We are not trying to do something with it. And those people have access to it in the limited field of their activity. The moment they move away from that, they are just as neurotic as everybody else. So we are moving beyond thought, not back. We step beyond thought. This is humanity's destiny. And it's urgent now, not in the sense of, oh, we must get there. It's urgent in the sense that there is an intensity now to the arising consciousness, because the madness that is the dysfunction of the old consciousness is also getting accelerating. It gets worse, and at the same time, the new is already arising. The two movements, the old still not even having reached yet the end of its madness, and the new arising at the same time. The old is still much more visible in this world, the madness of the old state of consciousness, with its need for conflict and problems, and the violence that arises out of that state, and the immeasurable suffering that humans inflict on each other and on themselves out of that state. That madness is continuing on the planet. You only need to watch the news on TV or read the paper. It's a continuation of what we have seen in the 20th century and before that. And the new is arising, not so much visible on the surface of things yet. Rarely mentioned in the media. Occasionally it is mentioned already here and there. So this is why we are here, simply not to make it happen, but to allow it to happen. We are simply opening the door wider so that can, less and less, we're not offering resistance to that anymore. So, your practice here is continuous, but don't make impossible demands upon yourself. Of course, you will get drawn even here back into mind streams, yes. You may reincarnate into a reactive mind stream. And then a moment comes when suddenly there's an awakening out of that. Oh. And you can see how clear, how obvious the difference between the states of the state, the awakened state. A moment ago, you were in that heaviness, that dense energy. And suddenly, you step out. And it's also like having left, when the plane, you're on the plane, it goes through the clouds, and suddenly it's, the clouds are underneath you. Oh, and there's vast, clear space, infinite. And so, and the clouds are still there, but you're not in them anymore. Oh. And so as you walk here through the gardens along the river, see if you can be in that state where the sense perception does not absorb your attention entirely, nor the mental labels that arise to do with those sense perceptions or to do with something totally different. They don't absorb your attention totally. Attention remains free as the field of attention. In other words, you perceive in and through stillness without needing to label everything immediately through the mind. Of course, you know you're looking at this flower. You know it's a flower without having to tell yourself that this is a flower. You know it's beautiful without having to tell yourself that it's beautiful. And you realize that there is vast knowing beyond mental labels and concepts. And then you know far more than you could ever know through labels or concepts, because you sense there is a depth to that which we call flower and an aliveness to that which we call flower. That mystery that is not explained by the label flower at all. That mystery that is covered up by the label flower and gives you the delusion that now you know what it is. Just a sound. You've made a sound that has come out of your mouth, or you've uttered the sound in your mind, and that gives you the delusion that you know what that is. Children are told that when they learn a language, the delusion is reinforced every time you tell a child, that's called such and such. I have forgotten the names of flowers. What's that? Gladioli. This is a gladioli, if that's what it is. And the child will believe you. Dreadful. So what can you do do you tell a child, don't call it anything? That doesn't work either. But you might say to a child, well, look at it, smell it, touch it, look. And then, as an afterthought, yeah, you can say, oh, by the way, we call it such and such, instead of saying, it is such and such. Then that creates some distance from the label, so that the child doesn't totally believe in that label, because then you get more and more trapped in concepts and labels until you reach the age of, then finally at 18, you're totally imprisoned. You've been through the system that has done it even more to you, and you're totally imprisoned in a conceptualized reality of mental labels that concern both the world around you, and they're all conditioning. All the surrounding culture has conditioned you with whatever mental labels they've put into you, and you inhabit a conceptualized reality, not knowing how dead your universe has become, how dead and deadened your reality has become. And you live in equally in a conceptualized sense of self. You make yourself into mental concepts, and so this is the essence of not knowing who you are. That's the essence of this false self. Once you have a false self, nothing is seen as it is, and everything is misinterpreted through that conditioning. Everything is distorted and deadened through that conditioning. And that's how people live. And that is our entire civilization has come out of that. And is it surprising how mad the civilization is? Of course it's not surprising, considering the state of consciousness out of which it has come. So we are stepping out of that, the compulsion to label continuously, and so you move here, you walk through the gardens and along the river, and what arises is the state that is free of the need to label. And should a label arise in you as you walk, which is a thought, you recognize it as just a thought and not it. And then it arises and passes, and you're back in just... And then perhaps another compulsive label comes. Okay. And then somebody comes towards you on the path, walking. And some mental judgment comes in concerning the form of this being. And you recognize it as a thought. No more. You no longer completely believe in it. You're not completely in it anymore. You allow that to be also. And then so gaps arise in which there are no labels, in which seemingly you no longer know anything. And that's why it's a little bit frightening for some people to enter that realm, because it seems at first as if you no longer knew. And I need to know what's going on here. I need to judge it in some way, classify it in some way. No. And you see how beautiful, powerful, intelligent, and deep that state is of not labeling. And great intelligence operates here. But it is not the limited intelligence of the human mind. It's only a small aspect of the vastness of intelligence that ultimately you are. So it's a little bit like you become like a child whose mind is not yet totally burdened by labels, but a child who is already very much looking at everything, because everything is new, but hasn't got many accumulated labels yet. That child looks in a state of great awe and wonder, because everything is so alive and new. It hasn't got enough labels yet to deaden the entire world. And the child is open and alert. And again, this is only to give you a little pointer. We are not going back to that. We are going beyond where it has certain similarities with that state that a child is in whose mind is not yet totally burdened by labels. It has certain similarities with the state that an animal is in who is in a state with great connectedness with the one, or a the whole of plant life exists in that such deep connectedness with the totality, in such deep stillness, being totally and completely and utterly itself, the tree. So, and this is why Jesus said, truly I tell you, you must become like little children if you want to enter the kingdom of heaven. It is similar to the state of that child at that age, and yet it is beyond, because you've already moved through thought and you've come out the other end. But that, one could say, that innocent perception, fresh, new, alive, and there you can enjoy the play of phenomena, and there's such a wonderful play of phenomena in this country, such multiplicity of forms and life forms and human beings. Amazing. And so you walk as just an aware presence, a field of aware presence. And you know yourself as that awareness, not conceptually. You perceive through stillness. With occasional interruptions of labels, and there's not a problem, because you know there's mind movement, and then it subsides. Space again, another mind movement, subsides. Fine, not a problem. And then perhaps a big mind movement comes, and for 1 hour you're completely in it. Perhaps it got triggered by something that wasn't quite right in your room, or if something that in your room something happened, and and then finally it comes to an end. I must get out of here. Yes, you can get out, or you can stay. Whatever it is, it's fine. If you stay, you can surrender here. If you go get out, you surrender there. So the awakening, this is what it is, out of a million years of conditioning, out of mind. And that's where the teaching comes from. Otherwise, I would have to prepare what I'm going to tell you. That would be a lot of work. I have to feed them information for 6-7 days. No. It comes out of the stillness. It does the teaching. I don't have to do much. And it's possible to live in such a way that whatever you do is almost, one could say, being done for you. You're no longer in a struggle and conflict relationship with the world, needing to complete myself by getting somewhere, achieving something, becoming someone. And suddenly it's done for you. And this is why Jesus used the term awakening. There are quite a few parables about staying awake, not going to sleep. Buddha, the root of the word, means awake, the one who is awake. There's a beautiful title, a book by Krishnamurti, called The Awakening of Intelligence. And of course, that is what it is. It is the awakening of true intelligence, not the limited ability to solve IQ puzzles. Nothing wrong with that either, but much greater, vaster than that. Beautiful, we have the teaching of Krishnamurti that points to the same, not quite as directly, because he liked to teach in the through negation. So he asked, let's inquire, can we get there through thinking? Can we get there through thought? Is it possible to have? And so he asked more and more questions about whether thought can get you there. And of course it can't. And he wouldn't agree with it, of course, but the entire teaching tells you, don't think. Rise above thought. But that would be a positive teaching. His tradition was negation, which is a powerful teaching also. Now, in those of you in whom this is arising strongly already, those of you, and in some of you it is arising very strongly already, in others it's just beginning to arise. In those of you in whom it is arising strongly, you are able to say no to thought by saying yes to what is. No to thought to simply, by choice, say, I'm not thinking. And this is not willpower. It doesn't work. To suppress thought through sheer willpower can work for a little while, but the kettle will continue to boil. You're holding the lid down, and suddenly thought will erupt again, more strongly than ever. So that doesn't work. But in those in whom it is arising strongly, you can simply choose to step out of thought and say, okay. And this is why Nisargadatta Maharaj, the teacher, defined the meditative state, and he was only talking, he must have been speaking to one or two people at the time, he defined the meditative state as the radical refusal to harbor thoughts. And when you look at a photo of his, you can see how radical he is. He was speaking at the time to certain people. This is not, does not yet apply to everyone. It's the arising presence is not yet strong enough in everyone to be able to say, this is true for me, that I can simply radically refuse to harbor thoughts. I'm not having any thoughts, that's it. Now that looks like an act of choice. And then, of course, you come into conflict with those teachers who say, there's nobody there to choose, and so on and so on. Of course, it looks like choice, because it still looks as if there was somebody here. There is a form here, and that form does something. And from the perspective of form, it looks like an act of choice. I refuse to harbor thoughts. And then you walk through the gardens. refusing to think. That looks like choice, doesn't it? Because you could choose to think, but you choose not to think. But how is it that you can make that choice? You can only make that choice because presence is arising in you, and it's only because of the arising presence that you can say, I'm making that choice. So who is choosing? If presence were not arising, there would be no choice. Presence is beyond the person. Presence is the evolutionary impulse of the universe moving through you. The totality, the one. So, of course, we have the relativity of language. On one level, it is true to say you have a choice. On another level, it is not true at all to say that you have a choice. See, no statement is absolutely true ever. You have to see where it is at, what perspective, what level. So both statements, you have a choice and you have no choice, are equally true. And the mind doesn't like that. This is so wonderful to be part of the evolution of consciousness on the planet through this little form. It wants to flower. And you thought you were a little person. Needing this and needing that and protecting myself against this and that. Now, as the unconditioned arises, as the stillness arises, through which you perceive the world and allow it to be this moment, allow it to be, that realm of stillness, that dimension of consciousness, is also the dimension of the sacred. This is the only dimension where the sacred is and dwells. It's always there, but it's concealed. The sacred, the dimension of the sacred, is always concealed in now. Why is it concealed? Because you're not in the now. The now is obscured to you by mental noise. But the moment your attention enters now, you realize the now is always sacred, no matter what form it takes. It's the sacredness doesn't lie so much in the form, although it includes the form. There's a greater vastness to now, and that is the realm of the sacred, that space of now. So there's a sacred river here. When you go down there, you can honor the sacred river by being, by perceiving it and being with it in the state of still, alert presence. Not conceptualize it, label it.
Thank you.